Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Heal My Voice Radio. And in the background, you can hear the typewriter, so you know that we are going to talk with authors today. Heal My Voice Radio is a show that is dedicated to providing information and engaging in conversations that support women's voices, listening to their inner voice, reclaiming personal power, reconnecting to their inner authority, empowering women through the exploration and healing of their stories. That is our mission. My name is Andrea Hyland, and I'm the founder of Heal My Voice. And in the Heal My Voice projects, we create environments for empowering women and girls to heal a story in their life and to connect with their inner authority and innate wisdom. This is the wisdom they were born with that has been covered up by trauma, grief, loss, and change, and even experiences where they were told to sit down and shut up. The subtle, covert, and overt ways our voices have been turned down. We believe healing an old story leads women to a richer expression of their unique gifts and leadership and gives them access to all of their wisdom. Heal My Voice offers a variety of online writing programs, and you will find 10 books from Heal My Voice and Heal My Voice Sweden, as well as resources on the healmyvoice.org page. And in 2018, there will be study guides to go with the books as we begin a 3-year celebration of all of the women's stories that have been written since 2010. Well, this is the 6th of 7 radio shows highlighting the contributing authors leading up to the launch of the book, Innovative Voices, True Stories by Women Awakening a New World. The launch is on Friday, October 27th. This is the completion of a 9-month process where women went deeply into a story from their past to explore a personal awakening. The radio shows are a way for each of us to speak about the experiences as we integrate the things we learned into our day-to-day life, and to help you awaken to your own stories. So before I bring on my guests today, I want to ask you a few questions. When you hear the word innovation, what or who do you think of? Do you think of a famous inventor or entrepreneur? Do you think of a leading edge Fortune 500 company or a startup? Do you think of a Nobel Peace Prize winner? But how about this one? Do you think of yourself as an innovator? Or how about the woman you are standing next to in the grocery line? The woman who is running an online business? The woman who is playing with her child at the playground. In an inspirational TED Talk called The Art of Innovation, Denise Michaelides describes 3 ways to innovate. The first way is very radical or breakthrough, like new products or markets or landing a man on the moon. The second way is redefining the way an existing company operates. So, for example, furniture is not a new idea, but IKEA manufactures furniture in a very differentiated, innovative way. But the third way is the one that we have been really exploring. And this is the one that's often overlooked. This is innovation as continuous improvement lots of small change all the time. Continuous improvement, lots of small change all the time. This is the kind of innovation where you notice a challenge in your life, or you have a new idea on how to do something, and that new ideas are created, that you make change. And that is what human beings do in order to awaken a new world. Now on to the show and to receive some inspiration from our guests. So I'm joined by two authors today, Jeannie Dougherty and Tamara Latrice Robinson. And we're going to start by focusing on Jeannie with her story, and then we'll turn the attention to Tamara about halfway through the show. So Jeannie's story is called I Thought I Was Okay. And here's a little bit about Jeannie before she starts to share her story with you. Jeannie Dougherty is an author, speaker, trainer, and counselor with expertise in feminine leadership and communication. Jeannie teaches her clients. Actually, I want to look at this one. Jeannie teaches her clients how to remove their obstacles of feeling afraid, too busy, and disconnected. She shows her clients how to lessen their constant negative thinking so they can calibrate their minds, bodies, and spirits to their open hearts. She is a dancer, yogi, and an intuitive healer that shows her clients on how to fearlessly love their divine wisdom while they create their inspired and innovative life. I have Jeannie's LinkedIn page on the homepage of the show there, so you can click on that to learn even more about her. So Jeannie, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Hi there. I want to just turn it over to you now to read your story or tell a summary, whatever you would like to do to really bring the listeners into your words.
Yes, I think I'll read just a small excerpt from my story, and then we'll continue the conversation.
Sounds great.
Okay. As Andrea said, the title of my story is I Thought I Was Okay. I thought I was okay. I thought I was doing well and taking charge of my life, living it to the fullest. I have a family, and I'm an accomplished woman. I convinced myself and everyone around me that I was okay, because if I'm not okay, then I'm exposed and vulnerable, and I want none of that. It means everyone can see me and judge me as incompetent, less than, and unworthy. I'm at risk. I'm not safe. I thought I was okay. I told myself and everyone around me, I am okay. I don't know what else to do. I don't want to hang on to this moment, yet I feel stuck in this moment. This is the loop I am in and how I seem to handle the big decisions in my life. I keep waiting for a magical sign. When none arrives, I think and believe the worst about my life. One crazy element about abusive relationships is that when your abuser is no longer present, you still reenact their hurtful and traumatic statements in your head, except you think it's your voice. My first serious relationship was with a man whom I loved deeply and saw great things he was doing in the world, only to discover he was an abuser. I didn't see or understand the red flags that waved so clearly in front of me. He gaslighted me, he lied to me, he cheated on me, and was extremely jealous. He left a trail of destruction behind him. He was controlling, and most importantly, he was dangerous. It took me a while to see this fact and finally understand. He really is going to kill me if I don't leave. He can't seem to stop, no matter what I say, what his mother says, or his friends. I left him and I didn't look back. Grief came later, grieving that he wasn't the man I thought he was. I was crestfallen, full of self-pity and terrified if anyone ever found out about this relationship. I looked okay to everyone else, and often women and men saw me as the leader. They completely misread my ability to stand still when chaos ensued, that I was strong and powerful inside. Inside, I was frozen. I was looking for a way to escape. Quick, hurried, or fearful movements, I learned, were signs of weakness. And under no circumstances can I be weak. I created a thick shell to protect myself in the world, hiding myself from others and from me. I became a master of light and shadow in my own protected skin. I would study the situation so I could see when to speak and when to remain quiet. I say gleefully, I was really good at this. The contrast was when I would be a loose cannon. Feelings and words would build inside of me, seeing the hypocrisy of what people were saying with their actions said something else. I wanted to scream bullshit. The abuse I had survived as a child gave me a distorted perspective. When I would finally let go and unleash my anger, I thought I was at level 3. Compared to everything that had been thrown at me, I thought, this is nothing. My anger is mild compared to what I had survived. In retrospect, if I'm honest with myself, I was really at a level 8. Blowing the anger out was steam coming out of my ears. My defense to anyone who criticized me, you are weak and you are not my problem. How did I get involved in an abusive relationship in the first place? Why did I have problems in my business? Why didn't I see a predator, my mother's boyfriend, swoop in and harm my mother? The answer, I was out of balance between my heart and mind.
Thank you. Let's take a breath for a moment. I want a presence that where I am in California, it is 11:11. So for anyone who likes to tune into the energy there, whatever. It's 11:11 in California, and I know that you and Tamara are in Maryland. So I want to presence our locations also. So thank you. You know, Jeannie, there are so many different layers to your story. I want to jump in with something, though, because one of the words that really jumped out at me when I heard you read it this time was the word frozen. And I wanted to know if you would talk a little bit about fight and flight responses and how we actually, for women who are so powerful and have a voice, we don't always recognize that frozen state. So I want to know if you would talk a little bit about this, like the fight or flight response in terms of, trauma or feeling, like a perceived attack.
Sure.
And a threat to survival, but then that other piece of frozen that we don't always talk about.
Yeah, I guess the best thing I can say for myself about the feeling of frozen is that if I'm feeling threatened, and I'm not sure what you're going to do, but I have an instinct inside of me that I'm afraid of you for whatever the reason, I will tense up my muscles and I will look straight ahead and I won't move. And I've learned that's the safest thing to do unless, of course, you throw something directly at me. Then, of course, I got to run and get the heck out of the way, which is, one of those things that's just kind of the biology, fight versus flight. But for me, how it spiraled out of control in the sense that, there's that moment, in time of like, oh my gosh, I'm feeling threatened. I've got to make a decision. Do I stay or do I run for my life? And for me, how the frozen piece continued was that being verbally abused kind of really distorted my self-esteem even further. Like I really took on the energy and then I wasn't able to release it. So it stayed in my body, and I just was scared to think otherwise. I guess another way to think about abuse, or emotional abuse in particular, verbal abuse, is that it forces us to take an action, And so the action might be that I'm going to yell back at you. The action might be that I'm going to just sit quietly in the corner and not move. Or the action is going to be like, well, I guess I'm wrong. I guess you're right, which is part of the gaslighting. Whatever you say, I guess you're right. So I feel like right now as a society, as women, this Me Too experience that, we're having, at least here in America, is so good for us because I feel like it's a step pushing back at the abuse that we're receiving from our current president. Who literally, when you watch even, news anchors who are interviewing them, they have this look of like, what is he talking about? I don't understand him. What is going on? And they just kind of sit there kind of frozen. And it's the people who say, wait a minute, I'm going to take you to cause on this, or, you know, say, I want you to explain to me, you know, it's not even about the military families this week. It's about everything. When people finally pick up the choice of action and saying, I'm going to ask you about this. I want to find out what you think now. And so then immediately, as soon as you push back, then the abuser in this case has to make a decision. You know, what am I going to be right? Am I going to get angrier? What am I going to do? Am I going to shame you even more? What is it that I'm going to do? But in that moment, then it's more of an exchange instead of just an onslaught. I'm certainly not saying that speaking up all the time is the perfect thing to do, and there's certainly ways of doing it. But I have to say, when you don't suck it in for the sake of them, because that's the only response you're given, you have more choices.
Well, and I want to also shine a light on how this is one of the ways. So the Me Too is so important right now of raising awareness, because one of the ways that women in their strength have kept themselves safe in abusive situations, whether it is sexual abuse, it's threats, it's even threats. I mean, I was in a relationship where he didn't hit me, but he would corner me and hit the cabinet behind me. And so there's this fear, whatever, but we're really good keeping it all together for the outside world. And that, to me, is the frozen state that can happen where people will look at, like, wow, well, that seemed like the way that guy talked to her seemed abusive to me, or they're uncomfortable, but they're like, but she looks okay. She looks like she's handling it, you know, or doesn't look like it's affecting her. And so raising awareness through these conversations is so important to call it out, because things don't change in the world until there is awareness and until we're using our voices as a collective rising up about it. So
absolutely.
Do you have anything else you wanted to say about that?
I was just going to say, and then the minimization starts in, which is part of the gaslighting. He didn't hit you. He just hit the cabinet. Why can't you take me and yell at you're the one who made the mistake, right? Like, how crazy is that? But yet that is a consistent message of, like, well, you need to stand up, or you need to suck it in, or you need to just get over it.
And the questioning of, did I do something to cause this? Am I wrong?
Right.
Instead of that, it doesn't matter. You know, I mean, I had a relative at one point where we were talking about the football player who was caught on video hitting his wife in the elevator. And the relative said to me, well, I heard she was a bitch. And I was like, what? It doesn't matter that whatever she said. It's like, no one deserves to be hit in that way, or threatened, or pinned down, or, you know, whatever that is. So, you know, what escalated someone to get to that bitch status, even? You know, what else is going on in that situation? So, thank you. I don't know that this is the direction we thought we were going to go in today, but I feel like the consciousness of Me Too that's happening is raising our voices to really speak out even more about this. And to stop the normalization. We're interrupting that pattern, or I guess that the word would be hacking it, hacking the normalization of that. I know we're going to talk a little bit about narcissism, because that is such an important part of your story. And even the, an awareness around that, how we're having more of an awareness about people who are narcissists in our lives and what that really means to be in that. I just want to also invite Tamara on. I'm going to see what Jeannie has to say about narcissism. But hi, Tamara.
Hi, Andrea. Hi, Jeannie.
All right, I have you on live, and I see someone else here too. So hold that thought, Jeannie. I want to ask you about narcissism, but is this Kat? No.
No, it's Lisbeth.
Marie? Lisbeth, hello. All right, well,
yes.
I have your line open. I have your line open here. You can mute it, but if you have something to ask, feel free to jump in also. So we have you here, and it's great to hear your voice.
Okay.
So Jeannie, you know, tell us a little bit about narcissism and the conversation we've had about the narcissism of your mother.
Yeah, so one of the things that I was really careful of when I wrote my story is I did not want to call my mother a narcissist in my story, not because I don't believe that she wasn't. It's because I didn't want the focus to just be on her. So that's something you learn as a child when you have a narcissistic parent. They always come forward. As I've said many, many times in my life, that I was guest starring in my mother's life, you know. her youngest daughter is now coming in to play the part, and that's the way it always was. I didn't mind if a reader took that and, you know, came to their own conclusion. That was fine. But I feel like the problem then always stays there. So-and-so is a narcissist. Instead of looking for an innovative solution is how am I going to cope with the narcissist, or how am I going to deal with the conversations, the text messages, the in-person meetings, the holidays, you know, whatever, childcare. We could go on and on and on, because really that's the meat of the conversation. It's not about, well, they're a narcissist and, you know, I'm powerless to stop them and I have, you know, no other choices but just to put up with this. What I found through writing my story was looking at not only the good things that my mother did, but the negative things as well, and then comparing and contrasting them to my father to understand really where was my voice in many different situations and how could I take cues from both of my parents in terms of, you know, well, this is what they might have done, but here's what I'm going to do. Or, you know, sometimes I do act more like my dad in this situation, and sometimes it's not for the best. And just really taking a look at that and just, you know, seeing, if you will, the template, the framework, and not throwing it out, not hating it, not dismissing it, but asking for it to come in and reintegrate and align itself differently in my mind and in my voice. That, to me, was the innovation.
Well, and to me, it's also the place where you are getting a different perspective. You're saying, okay, here's the situation. Where am I? How am I responding to it? And where do I have the power to change that response? I know that you work with your clients on the negative thinking. And, you know, changing negative thinking. And I feel like this relates to what you were just saying. And you use the word calibrating their minds, bodies, and spirits to their open heart. What do you mean by that? That calibrating their minds, bodies, and spirits to their open hearts?
So I feel like our minds in general run amok. And most of the time it's negative. And we often don't pay attention to our bodies unless we're in pain or there's a disease or we just think we're getting older. We don't always think of ourselves having, you know, that our body might actually be able to heal itself on its own. It may not require everything else. And it may require some discipline, like maybe you're not going to eat the same junk food that you've been eating for 20 years and think that your life is going to be just great. Like maybe your body's going to outgrow it. You don't need the same sugar, if you will, or fat or whatever kind of junk food that was great when you were 15. You may not need that now. Your body may crave something different, which might require more discipline. But I also feel like what people do is they compartmentalize their minds and their bodies and even their spirituality. And I feel like there's like this new sort of new agey word about being heart-centered. But I don't think it's a new agey practice. I think it's just a statement. And it's also, for lack of a better word, it's a mindset. And when you are connected and aligned and you feel like you are making choices from your heart instead of well, I worried all day about this one decision, and then I decided to do this other thing, and then I find out 3 days later it's the wrong decision. Now I hate myself. Well, how is that positive? You know, how is that going to help you in life, you know? So I find that when you can get out of your shadow and see your own blocks, you're able to move forward, and then you feel more confident in your decisions. I read a really interesting little tidbit about, I think her name is Anna Wintour. I think she's like the Vogue editor. I think that's what she does. And one of her great weapons for success, as she says it, maybe she needs the word weapon, is that even if she has no idea what they're talking about in terms of making a decision for Vogue or what it could possibly be, she just stands in her choice and says, yes, it will be. It doesn't matter if her choice falls apart. She's just so confident she will do that. And I remember thinking, like, you can sit there and call her all these negative things, like she's a liar, she's, a, you know, the B word, you name it. Or she's a master magician of the unknown. Isn't that innovative?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And how often do we give ourselves permission to make a decision and not sit there and then, you know, kind of cut it down, minimize it? Well, I was just winging it. I thought I would let this unfold organically. I thought I would try this. I was going to do the opposite of what I normally do. Instead of, no, I'm choosing this. Maybe you don't know the whole internal discussion. It feels right, and you're going with this answer.
Yeah, the mystery, the ability to claim something as well as be open to the mystery of the unknown. I can really feel that. I want to see if Tamara has a reflection or a question for you, Jeannie. Tamara?
Sure. Yes. Jeannie, your story, from the first time I read your story, it draws me in. It pulls me in right from the title. I thought I was okay. And sometimes it's difficult for us to admit that we're not okay. So I wanted to know, how did you find the courage to not only acknowledge that you weren't okay, but then also take the necessary steps to make that change?
Yeah, it's been a lifelong process of admitting when I'm not doing so well. It's been issues for me for trusting, you know, that vulnerable voice. But I had a really amazing dance experience this past April that I was dancing with a master instructor. And he gave a direction, and I realized I had no idea what I had been doing for 5 years. And so there was this part of me that felt completely humiliated. And I decided I could stay feeling humiliated because I had no idea. I'd never heard this before. And I realized I'd been dancing things incorrectly, if you will. Or I could just simply take on the new information and move forward and see what happens. And I chose the latter. After I pulled out in my head.
Right. It's like first the breakdown, then the change.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Some habits are good habits for change, let me tell you. You have like, all right, now I'm going to have my meltdown, and then I'm going to go do it. Yeah.
Right.
But I did freeze. I literally froze on the dance floor. I didn't say a word. I'm sure nobody realized I was, you know, in a place of like, oh, my God, you know, in my head. I just froze, and I wasn't frightened. I was just frozen with, holy moly. Well, I didn't know this. I was supposed to know this. I didn't know this.
I know one of the things that the two of you have in common is your love of dance. And as we're kind of completing this time with Jeannie and then turning the attention to Tamara, I wonder about what each of you have learned about trusting yourself by your connection with dance, with writing, with having a new perspective. So I'll leave it at that and see what connects for each of you.
Mm-hmm.
so no one feels a connection with dance?
No, I was thinking really broadly myself. I was like, well, I mean, the best thing I would say is that dance is embodiment, and the most personal things can be shared without words.
And I think I've learned through dance to just flow in the process, because I've just kind of learned over the years that dance is not always choreographed. Dance could just be a wave of your hand or a sway of your hips. It doesn't have to be something that's taught, or it could just be your natural movement. So I've just learned through dance to just flow, whether it's through movement or just flow through life and enjoy the process.
Well, I can see from both of you the power of trust when you allow that movement and flow, how that can bring an embodied level of trust. Jeannie, before I turn the full spotlight to Tamara, how can people get in touch with you? What's a good way to connect with you? And anything that's going on in your life that you want to share?
Sure. I mean, I would say there's about three different ways, and that is you can find me on LinkedIn under Jeannie Doherty. I have a website, jeanniedoherty.com, and then also Twitter. I created Messages from the Heart because I feel like in this world right now we need inspiration and we need creativity and we need innovation. And like you said, sometimes the best kind of innovation is small, but it is continuous. And I find when you can hand over that piece of heart wisdom to the masses, people find you.
Thank you. Thanks for sharing your story, and stay connected here. We're going to turn our attention to Tamara, but I want to do the same thing and ask you to come in towards the end of her reading her story and all. So thanks, Jeannie.
Sure.
So Tamara, let me just read a little bit first. Tamara Latrice Robinson is an international best-selling author of the books Live and Love Out Loud and Time to Focus on You. She helps busy moms deal with the very real feelings of guilt experienced while attempting to create time for themselves. As a busy mom with a teenage daughter, Tamara understands the feelings and emotions moms encounter with mommy guilt and placing themselves on the back burner. With a constant focus on family, it is common for moms to feel overwhelm and guilt with no clear plan for personal downtime or self-care. Tamara's focus is to help moms create time for themselves, place their goals and dreams higher on their daily priority list, and avoid mommy burnout. Tamara invites you to download a copy of her Simple Steps for Busy Moms to Avoid Being Overwhelmed, and that's at focusonyoufreegift.com. I have that on the show page, so you could just click there and go sign up and download a copy of her Simple Steps for Busy Moms. So welcome, Tamara.
Thank you, Andrea. Thanks for having me.
And I would love to have you read some of your story or share a summary to bring the audience, the listeners, in to your story.
Okay. Well, I'll just start with reading a few excerpts from the story, and then we can continue with the discussion.
Great.
Okay. The title of my story is Journey to Me, Reconnecting to My Voice and My Passion to Live and Love Out Loud Again. I have a painting in my living room titled Step Out on Faith by artist Kevin Wack Williams. It is a picture of a blindfolded woman taking a step off a cliff into the hands of God. She can't see the stormy sky behind her or the rough seas beneath her. Her only focus is to step into the hands of God, which leads to a bright future ahead of her. This painting is a metaphor for my life, an ever-changing canvas of new lessons for me to explore. This painting and other daily practices help me to turn my life around helped me rediscover my voice to live and love out loud again. Busy, stressed, overwhelmed, burnout. As a busy mother, I thought this was normal and something all moms experienced, but I knew something had to change. Let's go down a little bit. I began to look within and seek answers through prayer and meditation. I grew up in the church, so I understood the importance and power of prayer, but meditation was new to me. Prayer and meditation are completely different practices. Prayer occurs when I communicate or verbalize my desires, and meditation is getting quiet and tuning into the voice within that provides guidance and direction for those who seek it. I practiced meditation by myself, and I also began a meditation practice that focused on deeper connection within and connection with others. I began to feel sparks of energy rising from within, empowering energy, feminine energy, lighting me up from within. Something was waking up inside of me, and I wanted more. And I also want to read the last paragraph. The Step Out on Faith picture is located in my living room where I can see it every day. Although I've had the picture for several years, I see something different each time I look at it. It's as if the blindfolded woman in the picture is me at various stages of my journey. The painting has become my guide. I step out by making focused decisions for my life, creating more time for me, and it feels so good.
Thank you. Let's take a few deep breaths on your story. I love to have the story just land in the space. Because I know that hearing a woman's story touches us all in different ways. One of the things I want to say, Tamara, is that I want to shine a light on the fact that this painting is in a really visible place in your house. Mm-hmm. It is something that touched you deeply. It's a touchstone of what is possible and a reminder. And, you know, the words that you use are beautiful in your description of this. And I was just feeling like how important that is for all of us to have a touchstone of a reminder as we are, when we have an awareness about something that we want to change and where we're looking for strength and guidance, like to have something that is a touchstone like that. Like it is an evolving reminder for you. So I want to just ask, first of all, when did you realize you were losing yourself in the role of being a mom? Because in order to connect with this painting and have this as a reminder, there was some point where you realized, I'm losing myself here. Something's not right in my life and I want to make a change. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. It was a couple years ago and I realized that I lost myself as a person. I was basically defining myself as my daughter's mother. And everyone just, referred to me as, Carissa's mom. And I also noticed that my entire schedule, my entire life revolved around her activities. And she dances several times a week at a local dance studio after school. And she also competes in dance competitions. So everything that I did revolved around either her schedule for dance or her schedule for competitions. And I don't think I even realized that I had no time for myself. And I think the turning point for me, and funny, I said that because my daughter's dance studio was turning point. But the turning point for me came when that was all I talked about was her dance. If someone asked me how I was doing, I only talked about her. I only talked about what she was doing. It was almost as if everything that she did was my life. That was a part of my life. And I was also, when I would take her I would drop her off at the dance studio on any given day, she's there for a couple hours. And I would just go home. I would go home and I'd either watch TV or I cook dinner or, I'd just go home and I just felt like I wasn't doing anything for myself. But I thought that's what I was supposed to do as a mother. And then I would just go home until it was time to pick her up. But the funny thing is, was at the end of the day, at the end of the evening when it was time for me to go to sleep, I still felt like there was something missing. And I couldn't, for a long time, I couldn't figure out what that was until I just decided to reconnect to those things, to the dreams and desires and goals that I had set for myself before I became a mom. So it was almost as if I was busy being a mom, and I had put myself on the back burner, and I had to at some point make a connection to what I really wanted out of life beyond being a mother.
Well, and I want to highlight something that today, Tamara is a guest blogger on the healmyvoice.org page, and you had some really great simple steps of, four ways you can pursue your dream and be a great mom. And, you know, I mean, there's so much to say about this and the work that you're doing by raising the awareness and raising the consciousness, because there's a certain way that we have in our society have like, what is it to be a good mom? There's a certain normalization of what we feel it is to be a good mom. And it puts so much pressure on us. And I mean, I'm 61 years old. My daughters are all grown. They're 33, 32, 24. And I still have to go through these cycles of like where I'm making them more important than myself, but also noticing when I want to make them more important, you know, like maybe they're, one of my daughters was moving and I really wanted to be there and support her and support my granddaughter and everything else. So like it goes on. It's not just when you have children or you have a teenager.
Right.
It is like a really important thing and something to make visible. So I just wanted to ask you to talk a little bit more about that. Like, okay, let's just go into this place. Like, why is it important for women to focus on ourselves? Like, why, you know, beyond their role as a mom? And talk a little bit about that. Like, why is it important? Why don't we just, like, give over our entire lives to our children? But why is it important for women to actually focus on themselves beyond their role as a mom?
I want to say that being a mother is one of the most rewarding experiences that I've had in life. So I love being a mother, but I believe it's important for us to acknowledge who we are as women, as ourselves, or whatever your name is. I think we should acknowledge who we are as our name, not as our child's mother, because we are still that person that we were before we received that title of mom. Is still in there, and she still wants to be heard. She wants to be seen. She wants to be acknowledged. And a lot of us, a lot of the time, as moms, we are pressured by really some unrealistic standards by society of what motherhood is, but we're pressured to really put ourselves on the back burner. And any goals or dreams that we have, it's almost as if you're pressured to put those things to the side and focus all of your attention on this child, and then you end up losing pieces of yourself in the process. And before you know it, that child has left the house. They're in college. They're living their lives. They may even, you know, get to the point where they're starting their own family. And then you have to figure out who you are. You have to then figure out, well, who am I as a woman? I've been active in this role as a mother for several years. Who am I as a mother? And I noticed that even my daughter's 13, but I noticed that in when she would go to sleepovers with friends, and I'd say, you can go over to the sleepover and have fun. And then when she's gone for that night, or if she's gone for the weekend, I'm thinking, well, what do I do now? I was so bad for myself because I said, I don't know what to do with myself, because everything I do is for my daughter, and I would just sit at home and watch TV. Nothing's wrong with that. But I said, I want to write. I want to dance. I want to do something. And then all of these ideas started to pop up within me, and just really felt good. And I just realized that I had to carve out time for myself. And because I have a daughter, I know everything that I do, she's watching me. I'm sure boys watch their moms too, but I can only speak from having a daughter. Everything I do, she's watching every step that I make. So everything that I do as her mother now, I know that I'm modeling behavior that she will, you know, she will incorporate into her life when she becomes a mother. So I feel like to take care of myself as an example for her, but it also gives me energy to keep up with her schedule. So it's almost like everything kind of, it works together. If I focus on myself, if I focus on self-care or my journal writing or meditation, it fills my tank, just like when you fill the tank of a car. It fills my tank, and then I'm able to give more to her and give more to her schedule and supporting her through her dreams and her goals. So it kind of works both ways.
I love that. I really want to highlight two things, shine a light on it. One is the filling up of yourself. Like, I feel like we don't realize that, and that's what, I mean, and you talk about the mommy burnout and the, you know, recovery.
And the mom guilt also.
Yes, the guilt. And then the modeling of the behavior. I had a funny conversation with one of my daughters yesterday, the one who's 33, lives in Maryland, has a daughter, and she sent me a text, and she said, I'm in the car, do you have time to just catch up? And so I called her back, and I said, I have 15 minutes, and then I need to go because I'm going out to dinner with a friend, and he invited me to come see a film. And then she goes, you lead such an interesting life. She said, you're just always so connected and doing things with people. And I could feel this like excitement in her. And I said, oh, well, it's nice to know that, because I have felt pretty isolated lately because of the book program. Like, I've been staying in more. And then she said, yeah, but you're doing radio shows and you're doing calls, and I was like, oh, thank you for reflecting who you see me as, you know. And it was like, then I started thinking about it and realizing, well, she's right. I am, even when I take the dog for a walk, I'll say hello to all these people on the street, whether I know them or not. Like, I'm very connected with people in the world, but she sees that and knows that. And I could feel, like I said, the excitement she felt from that, almost like a, thanks, Mom, like, I'm going to be that. I'm going to live my life that way.
Right.
So the way that we, you know, the way we model for kids. But to go back a little bit, I just want to see if you could talk a little bit about the guilt and the mommy burnout. Like there's a point where you realized, I don't know what to do with myself. What are some simple steps that women who are noticing that in themselves, that to rediscover and reconnect to who they are and even what their desires are beyond the title of mom. Do you have a few simple steps for us?
Sure. I can share a few things that I've used for my journey, and anyone can follow these steps as well. But the first thing for me was acknowledging that there was a problem, and realizing that I needed to make a change. And that didn't come until, like I said, it was just a few years ago, and my daughter's 13. And I just felt like, I don't want to say I felt like I was drowning, but I felt like I was doing all these things during the day. And then at the end of the day, I still felt unproductive. I still felt like there was something missing. There was something that I wasn't quite reconnecting to. So the first thing that I did was acknowledging that fact. And then in order to reconnect to those dreams, goals, and desires, I started meditating. Like I said in my story, I understood what prayer was, but meditation was a little bit different. So I had to carve out time where I could quiet my mind and just listen for messages or listen for guidance and direction. And the way that I started doing that was just, I would set my alarm clock for 5 minutes earlier than I would normally wake up. So I'd spend the first 5 minutes of my day just getting quiet. And I would spend some of that time in prayer, just relating my desires for more, or relating my desires for understanding or guidance for my next steps. And then I just got quiet, just to feel what that answer was. And so I started off with 5 minutes of meditation. Then I might have gone up to 10. So it doesn't really matter how long I meditated, as long as I figured out a way to quiet my voice. And I had to do that first thing in the morning before I started my day, because then everything else was other focus at the time, or it focused on my daughter or focused on work or whatever it was that I had to work on. So it was meditation and then journal writing. Journal writing helped. It helped me to remember the messages that I received in the quiet meditation. And it also helped me to jot down ideas, whether it was for a blog post or a book or the story, you know, the story that came together for this book. A lot of that was some journal writings of mine, that some memories that I had not remembered, that I would not have remembered if it wasn't for my journal. So they were some journal writings. You never know where they'll be used. They could be private thoughts, or something for a blog post or a book or something to share with anyone else. But those are the main things for me, was acknowledging that I wanted to change, meditation, quiet meditation, and journal writing. And those are the first few steps that I use that really helped me on my journey.
Well, I want to acknowledge that, Tamara, because it is like the first steps that you took were actually to be in mm-hmm. stillness and allow the desire to bubble up. And then I feel like sometimes as women, I mean, I remember when like my kids were little and someone would spontaneously take them, and that feeling of like not knowing, well, what do I do at this time? And kind of like running
what do
around
I do
like, yeah, right. Like, and trying to be busy with something like, okay, wait, they're not here. What do I want to do? And that, you know, and that, but you, and I love the simplicity, like 5 minutes, just adding 5 minutes mm-hmm. of being silent in your day where you empty yourself out so that mm-hmm. inner voice and those inner desires can be reawakened. And the journaling is a way of obviously recording and having a way to reflect back, and you know, the way you just eloquently described that. I want mm-hmm. to, I'm just noticing we have about 10 minutes left of the show. I want to just invite Jeannie to come in. If Jeannie, if you have any questions or reflections for Tamara.
Yes. I'm trying to think here. When I was listening to your story and how you were reading it, I was mm-hmm. really sort of awestruck about the painting that you're describing, because in many ways uh-huh. that's what I know you as, you know, this fearless woman who's not bound by tradition mm-hmm. or fear. Like, you're pretty fearless from what I've seen of you. And yet, like, reading
Thank
this
you.
Or hearing this, you're welcome, hearing your story about, like, I don't know who I am if I'm not a mom. And just sort of like, wow, isn't that fascinating?
You know, well, I think that was the middle of my journey. Yeah, I think you met me in the middle of that discovery process. I think that's what happened. So, but yeah, there was a time when my daughter would go to either a sleepover, or her dad and I are divorced. So she mm-hmm. there are weekends where she goes to his house. And I would be home. I would just sit at home thinking, well, what do I do with my life now? Because everything I did revolved around her. And so when she wasn't in the house, whether she was at dance or at school or with friends, I had nothing to do, because I had not yet taken the time to figure out what it was that I wanted to do. But the strange thing that I remember is that, even though I was so busy with her schedule, at the end of my evening, at the end of my day, I still felt unproductive. And what I had to acknowledge and what I had to reconnect to is that what was left undone was myself, was my own desires and my own dreams and goals that I had not yet reconnected to. So it was almost like a light was shining in the corner of a dark room, but I couldn't figure out which corner it was in. I knew it was there, but it wasn't until I started to meditate and journal and even free writing. Free writing helps me, like, brain dump and get ideas out on paper. It wasn't until I started to do that that I made contact with that light, whatever that light was that was requiring my attention. So, yeah, so I think you met me during the process of me walking to the light, if I want to use that analogy.
Yeah,
yeah, but
well,
thank you. It's fearless. I like that. I like that description,
yeah.
Fearless.
Yeah, I mean, I've never heard you ever say, like, oh, I can't make a decision. I always hear that you're willing to make a decision. You're always willing to step forward. You are keenly aware that you are an intimate role model for your daughter and that you are doing your best. So it's so nice to hear that you had a moment of looking back and realizing, like, you know, I'm a mom, and what else can I do?
Mm-hmm.
What else
right.
is out there
yeah.
for me?
That's true. Yeah, I'm a mom, but what else am I? That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I feel like there was this theme that also wove in between both your stories about finding balance in your life also. And so whether or not we put in, you know, everything into our work or our jobs or, I mean, there have been times where a spiritual practice has become like work to me, where I've had too many things I've put on my plate, you know, about the amount of time I'm going to meditate or do yoga or write or whatever. It's like it becomes a full-time job. And even that can be out of balance. So I feel like that's something that I heard both of you talk about, in that balance to live an inspired, true to
mm-hmm.
yourself, and bringing out more of your voice into the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, all right, let me just ask Lizbeth, as we're getting towards the end of the show, Lizbeth, is there anything you want to say or reflect on?
No, I just want to thank you all. It's been an interesting show to listen to you all. Thank you.
Thank
well,
you, Lizbeth.
Beautiful.
Thank you, Lizbeth.
Lizbeth is one of the contributing authors also, and you can see, you can find her show on the page here of archived shows. Thanks for being here, Lizbeth. Tamara, is there anything you want to say about, I know you have focusonyourfreegift.com, a way for people to download a copy of Simple Steps for Busy Moms to Avoid Being Overwhelmed. Anything else you want to talk about in terms of ways people can connect with you, things you have going on?
Sure. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Tamara Latrice, and Latrice is my middle name, so it's TamaraLatrese, so Tamara Latrice in both places. And I also have a free Facebook group for busy moms, and the title of that is Focus on You Movement, and so you can either search for it within Facebook as Focus on You Movement, or just go to the site. The URL is www.focusonyoumovement.com, and when you go to that, it'll take you into Facebook, and then you can just click to join that group, and I'll welcome you. What we normally do in that group is just share just tips. The group is just filled with moms with children at different ages, and I try to post in there maybe 3 times a week because we're all busy moms, so I don't want to post every day. But I like to share Monday motivation notes, and on Mondays, and then usually on Fridays or Saturdays, I may share something uplifting or something encouraging for moms to take time for themselves. And I also started a couple weeks ago, every Wednesday, I post a question of the week. So whether it's from conversations with other moms or just topics that moms bring up within the group, and I just come up with a question of the week, whether it's a poll question or just something for the moms to reflect on, and I just encourage the moms to just have conversation on different events or issues that moms deal with, and it's also a way for moms to reconnect and realize we're not alone in our journey. So
thank
it.
You. Thanks. Yeah, no, it's amazing. And I am in your group. I love the things that you're posting in the group. And
thank you.
I wish I had that group 33 years ago. So actually, I'm going
to
direct my daughter there. Great.
What's that?
Yeah. I'm going to direct my daughter, who has a four-year-old now, to your group.
Great.
And
yeah,
and also, and I will, once this book is launched on Friday, I'll have a little more time. So I'll come over and do some posting also, because it is something that we are always learning, just like we're always learning how to balance our lives and making ourselves a priority in our lives. Like, this is our life. It should be lived feeling joyful and connected to our passions, as well as doing things for other people. Yeah. So,
and
thank
it's also
you.
A good way for moms to know that you're not alone, because sometimes we don't talk about the issues because of that mom guilt or society's unrealistic standards of motherhood. So it's a way for us to come together as moms and just see how similar we are, and learn from each other.
And show our messiness, that we don't have to always look like we have it all together, because nobody does.
Right.
If you have it together all the time, then you're limiting yourself for growth, because growth is like you have
to.
Yeah. But there's some quote about how you have to crack open the seed in order to, get to the heart. That's what we're doing. Jeannie, any last words before I close the show?
No, I just wanted to say I am just thrilled to have this opportunity to be with all of us, the three of us.
Well, it's great. It's been a great show, and I really appreciate people who came and listened and stayed connected. And, we're all here to share and learn from each other. So thank you, Jeannie and Tamara.
Thank you, Andrea.
I'm going to close by inviting people to go to the Heal My Voice page on Facebook on Friday, because Friday we're going to really highlight the authors. For the past few weeks, we've been posting some of the excerpts of stories. The book is all set up now, so that available on Amazon and the Kindle version also. One of the things that I haven't really talked about is when you purchase a book like this, it's funny because I don't always get into the sales of it, but you're actually valuing women's voices. And so I want to encourage you to buy a book or share a book, and spread the word of women's voices. These are women telling you true stories where they really went into not only their hearts, but into the belly, into the womb, into the root, to really pull forth deep sharing that includes challenges and triumphs, because we believe in hope in the world. We believe in awakening a new world, and that we are all a part of it. So go to that page. And if you're inspired by writing, Beth Terrence and I are going to be doing a 30 days of writing, an online circle for people to explore their own voices. And that's on the healmyvoice.org page. So thank you, everyone, for being here. Thank you to my guests. And we are complete. Bye-bye now.